All right, welcome back. Primary Care Medicine this Tuesday morning. I'm Rachel Lusgarden, registered dietitian and your usual co-host for Primary Care Medicine. Dr. Marina Kurian is off this week. Thank you for joining us. We will be discussing in this half hour segment, breast cancer diagnosis and the pathologist role, as well as the role of AI. We are joined by Dr. Leilani Valdez. She is board certified in pathology, medical director at Regional Pathology Associates. We were discussing in the break, she's currently serving in her first term as governor on the board of College of American Pathologists. She's also president of the Texas Society of Pathologists. Welcome, Dr. Valdez.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
This is so timely. We are currently in Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Before we jump into all of this, tell us a little bit about your background and how you got into this field.
Great. Well, I like to tell people that I tried not to be a doctor. I tried real hard not to be a doctor, and I tried really harder, much harder to be not to be a pathologist. I actually grew up the daughter of a pathologist in South Texas, where I currently work now. And I didn't necessarily see myself in the role as I was growing up, but I couldn't be happier having served in this community as a community pathologist for the last 15 years. It was a journey to get here, but I am thrilled to be here, and I don't want to be doing anything else than taking care of this patient population and helping them be well.
So let's talk about that patient population, because you are a pathologist with a pretty unique specialty. Talk about what area of pathology you are in.
So in pathology circles, I'm what you call a generalist. I like to say I'm much more of a community pathologist because I serve my patient community here in South Texas. And while I am boarded in anatomic and clinical pathology and have subspecialization in dermatopathology, which is skin pathology, I serve as medical director of multiple laboratories. I sign out biopsy cases. What does that mean when a patient gets a biopsy from anywhere? Breast, since we're talking about breast this month, or, you know, colon or skin, which is my specialty, I will use my microscope to make a diagnosis. And I tell patients that I'm the most important doctor that you'll never meet, because the decisions that I make at my microscope with my colleagues, with some ancillary testing, direct what kind of care you're going to get from your primary care physician, which is fitting that we're talking today in the primary care hour, because we work really closely with the medical team to make sure that you're going to get the right treatment for the diagnosis that we make.
All right. Well, that doesn't sound general at all, but I hear all of that. And tying it back to Breast Cancer Awareness Month and breast cancer diagnosis, what is the pathologist's role in this?
Well, it's an integral role, right? So it's the most important role, because whatever happens to a patient once they've had our diagnosis, it determines everything, right? So you go through, let's start at the beginning. You go through, we're in October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. There's a big push to get your mammogram. Every woman over 40 should have a mammogram. I just turned 50. I'm going to have my mammogram later this month. It's part of my October routine, right? So what happens is when you have that mammogram is it's reviewed by a radiologist who determines whether or not there needs to be follow-up. And that follow-up may be more imaging, or it may be mean a biopsy. So the radiologist or surgeon will do a biopsy, and that biopsy goes to pathology. It comes to our laboratory. It goes through a very intricate chemical process that would make your organic chemistry brain explode, but we've been doing it for hundreds of years now, and it is the gold standard for making a diagnosis of either a benign lesion, something that you don't have to worry about anymore, or something that needs treatment, breast cancer. And it's only the pathologist that makes that decision. So it doesn't mean anything if you go through the biopsy process until you have the diagnosis from the pathologist. From me, from my colleagues, we look at it under a microscope. We determine if we need to do any follow-up special testing on the tissue. And then after that, if we do have to make the diagnosis of breast cancer, we do follow-up testing for prognostic markers. These are the markers that are going to tell the medical and surgical oncologist and the radiation oncologist what kind of treatment needs to be done for that breast cancer. So everything that determines treatment starts from that diagnosis that you get under my microscope. It's pretty powerful. I take it very seriously, as do the rest of my pathologist colleagues. We don't do this at all lightly. We're thrilled when we can give a diagnosis of a benign lesion, something that doesn't need follow-up, but we also realize the importance of what we do when it comes to directing care after that diagnosis.
You mentioned finding that tissue benign or malignant. Is also the staging of the cancer, is that something that you do as well?
Yes, staging typically involves multiple different data, right, that we take from the patient. How big is the tumor when it's looked at on radiology, right? So that's one, the measurement of it. Or if the patient has an excision lumpectomy for a primary diagnosis of the biopsy, the pathologist will measure that tumor to give that initial measurement for the size of that tumor, because size of the tumor is important when it comes to staging. Additionally, if a patient has a lymph node biopsy, we hear about sentinel lymph node biopsies, to determine whether or not that tumor has spread to the lymph nodes. That is also something the pathologist will determine under the microscope if they see tumor there, and that plays a role in staging. All of this information gets put together in the patient's chart and their history and directs the medical oncologist, the surgical oncologist, and the radiation oncologist to determine what will be the best treatment plan for the particular patient.
Is that something that pathologists play a part in as well, or make a recommendation for treatment? Or is that something that would be decided by the oncologist reading the reports?
In the best case scenario, it's our team effort, right? And we have at our institution, we have a breast conference where we discuss ahead of time each patient's treatment. We have a radiologist in the room. We have a radiation oncologist in the room. We have a medical oncologist. We have a pathologist, of course, and a surgeon all together to discuss all of the data together and what makes the most sense for that patient so that they can have the best outcome possible. Without all of the team together understanding every piece, it's a little bit harder, right? If there's a question about the report in pathology or in radiology, the surgeon and medical oncologist can ask those questions directly. We have a very close working team that works together to make sure that the patient gets the treatment they need.
I think this is so important and encouraging for our listeners and for patients to hear, because oftentimes it is one clinician, one doctor, speaking about this diagnosis and treatment plans. But to hear that there's a lot happening behind the scenes, and as you said at the top of the hour, the pathologist is, what did you say, the most important doctor that you will never see back in the lab reading those. So very important things. And for our listeners, if you would like to join our conversation, or if you have any questions about a breast cancer diagnosis, give us a call, share your story, ask your question for you or a loved one. Our number here at Dr. Radio is 877-NYU-DOCS or 877-698-3627. You can take your emails at docs@SiriusXM.com. I teased a little bit that we would get to talking about AI, and artificial intelligence can be a really controversial thing in a lot of different areas. Okay. This is, people feel taking over our world. But talk a little bit about what the role of AI can be for a pathologist.
Well, in pathology and at the College of American Pathologists, we're excited about the possibilities of AI to further help our patients, right? It's a very powerful tool. But it's a powerful tool like our other powerful tools that we have developed over a century of making diagnosis and directing treatment. That is the role of the pathologist. It's something we've been doing well over 100 years. And we use new tools to help us make better and better diagnoses and direct treatment for better outcomes, right? So no one is looking to AI to replace a doctor. I'm not worried. I have great job security. There's nothing that AI can do or will be able to do that takes the place of that teamwork that I just mentioned that we have when we get a group of physicians together to discuss a patient's care. What can AI help with? It can help us. It's a powerful tool. It can help us with immediately, I think, more of workload and how we make sure that we're getting priority to the right cases and making sure that patients that need acute care are getting, we're getting the information we need in a timely manner. But we also know in pathology, when we bring in new tools, that the tools are as powerful as what we have to educate them, especially important in AI, because the way AI is trained is incredibly important. We spend a lot of time training our newly minted pathologists to really question and think and, you know, make sure that they're thinking through the situations. If AI is not trained to encounter all those different situations, you're going to be relying on a tool that is not is going to overlook something. And we have patient lives that we take care of. So that's not okay. And there are no physicians out there that are going to tell you that we're going to rely on a tool that we don't know who trained it. We don't know what it may or may not be missing. And we may not know it until too late. So as a tool to help us make better diagnosis, I'm really excited about it. But I don't worry that it's going to completely take over my role in the hospital for sure.
All right. And we want to hear more on that, but we will go to the phones. Again, if you would like to join our discussion, we're talking about breast cancer diagnosis and the pathologist role, as well as the role of AI. Dr. Leilani Valdez, board certified pathologist. And our number here at Dr. Radio, 877-NYU-DOCS, 877-698-3627. We'll go to Leslie in Florida. Good morning, Leslie. Welcome to the show. What is your question?
I just recently had a mammogram, and I received a phone call yesterday that they saw something and they want to do more imaging. And I just wanted to know what to expect because, you know, your stomach drops when you hear that.
Absolutely. And I congratulate you on getting screened and doing that. That's something that's very important to do. And I understand how horrible it is to get that phone call, but please know that you are going to go through a very well-defined process at the imaging center or wherever you will get that follow-up. They will do some additional imaging. The mammogram is a screening test. And what we look for in a screening test is to make sure that it has a high sensitivity, meaning we're not going to miss anything, but because it's a screening test with a high sensitivity, it can mean that there are some false positives, right? So that what they are going to do with the imaging center is do additional imaging to make sure that it is not something they're concerned enough to biopsy. And they may make that decision while you're there, and they may offer you a biopsy while you're there. But know that even if they decide that you need a biopsy, that does not mean that it is cancer. That is the pathologist's job to determine, and that will be a diagnosis that's made by a pathologist a day or two after the biopsy. And know that you're in the process, but it doesn't mean that it is absolutely cancer. Don't go there yet. Know that you're in the process. Know that you're getting the best care possible. And by getting your mammogram early, you have done your part to make sure you catch anything early enough to get good treatment. So I know it's hard for me to give you anything that's going to make you feel better at this time. Please contact your primary care doctor to also get some reassurance. Do attend your follow-up appointments as recommended. The healthcare team only has your interests at heart.
Thank you for that. And Leslie, thank you for that call. And when we're feeling anxious about something medically, following up and getting that information is such an important piece and puts the power in our hands. Instead of sitting on it alone, don't suffer alone. You have a whole team there to support you. So thank you for that. And again, our phone lines are open. We'll continue to take calls. Our number here at Doctor Radio is 877 NYU Docs, 877-698-3627. If you have any questions about breast cancer diagnosis and pathology, we are discussing all of these things with Dr. Leilani Valdez. And we will go now to Cheryl in Georgia. Good morning, Cheryl. Welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning. I was wondering if you have a mammogram and it comes back and it's something called hammer or something. I can't remember what it's called. You, that sound
Hammer.
familiar? Yeah, it starts with something like hammer or something, or AHA something. It's something like that.
AH.
Yeah,
There is a diagnosis. I'm not a radiologist. I am a pathologist, but there is a diagnosis that radiologists tend to make that with regard to dense breast disease. I don't know if that's something that you're asking about.
it is from dense breast. And I've always done like a 3D or a always a regular mammogram or the 3D until they said we don't think you need the 3D anymore. But the last time I did one, the regular mammogram, they called and wanted to do an ultrasound because they said it was something that dense breast you have with dense breast, and it was called hammer or something.
I'm not aware of that, but you did the right thing to follow up and make sure that you follow the instructions after your mammogram. They're going to make sure that you get the treatment you need, and the important part is to follow up, right? If they say you need to come back for an ultrasound and or a biopsy, please do follow up. Don't be scared of that process. It's going to make sure that you catch any lesion that needs treatment early.
Okay, so you, it is something that could need a biopsy for this.
And who knows? The important thing is for you to follow up and follow the instructions given to you from the radiologist or your primary care physician, whoever is communicating to you the results of that test, that mammogram.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Cheryl,
Thanks
thank
for
you.
asking good questions.
Thank you for that call. And of course, yeah, if there's something that is unclear to us, or big words that we're not familiar with, these are great questions to ask about. Dr. Valdez, this is something that actually we've been discussing with all of our breast cancer experts that have come on the show for the past now, I mean, how many years are we into the pandemic, out of the pandemic, whatever it is, that backlog in availability for getting screened. And I say this not as a deterrent, not to for people to hear, oh, you can't get in anyway, so just put it off. Really the opposite, that as soon as you get that script from your prescribing doctor, your primary care, or whoever you get the that prescription for, to go for the mammogram ultrasound, make that appointment. Because is this something that you're still seeing in your area? I know you're not in with the radiologist, but getting these appointments still seems difficult.
In my smaller community, I'm in a smaller community of about 80,000, and our medical community serves about 100 miles on either side, on all sides of us. We've been fortunate to get that backlog conquered. I know sometimes in urban settings, access can be hard, but be persistent. It's been very important to us. So we've made sure that the community can have access to the screening studies they need, you know, not just breast cancer, which is incredibly important, but your colonoscopy, if you're of age, your PAP screening that women should have. These are screening tests that can find disease early, and so that it's very much treatable. This is why they should be covered as screening tests in most insurances, and why it's very important for patients to have them. We did see a backlog, and it was unfortunate. Here we are 3 years out, and I feel much better about the health of our community. It was a little bit frightening there for a little while because people didn't want to come into the hospital to get a mammogram or colonoscopy. Right. But I'm grateful that at least in my community here, feel like we've kind of gotten through it. And now we're just really trying to encourage people to keep up their health and making sure that they're doing their screenings as allowed and as necessary to keep our community healthy.
That's so great to hear. I partially speaking from personal experience in trying to make some of these appointments, but making them whenever you can get in, super important. And again, for our listeners, if you have recently had a mammogram, if you've been putting it off and you need some encouragement, or you had some results that you have some questions about, do give us a call here at Dr. Radio, 877-NYU-DOCS or 877-698-3627. We were talking about the role of artificial intelligence in pathology, and particularly in breast cancer screening. Is it the case that some of these programs would be able to spot perhaps lesions that a human eye could not?
Yeah, you know, it's possible, right? You like that technology to use it to really focus your attention in one area, right? The danger is it might focus in on one area and miss another area, right? So there's always going to be an opportunity for us to make sure we don't miss anything. As for a tool to help us be more efficient and say, let's focus in on this, that's great. And that's the kind of efficiencies I was talking about earlier that we look to take advantage of for AI in our work. However, we again go back to the training. If for one reason or another, the AI system that you're using to try and find that spot is trained in such a way that it might miss something else that it doesn't know about, that, hey, I'm looking for breast cancer, but there's some other lesion like a lymphoma or something happening, and it doesn't see that portion because it's not looking for that particular type of tumor, that could be problematic. So that's why you have to sort of make sure that you have someone who's thinking about the patient in its entirety, and you don't just use an AI to screen everything that comes through. It's helpful to draw attention, but at the same time, you're going to want to have a pathologist like myself or my colleagues, make sure that we've got the patient in mind and we know what we're looking for. And again, it'll be helpful, but it's not going to, at the end of the day, be the final word, because these are patient lives that we are working with, and that is really our primary goal, to get the best treatment possible. And we need to make sure that we do that with every diagnosis.
You mentioned the importance of that collaborative interdisciplinary team approach, and it sounds like the role of those computer programs, that AI is within the team, that it's not replacing anyone, and that it can be an additive component. Again, as you say, when trained properly, and this is probably something that is ongoing as the technology improves and can serve you and your patients in the best way.
Yeah, we are excited about it, right? It's like every new tool. When we started doing molecular profiling of tumors, we were excited about it because that meant more precision therapy for patients, right? But it hasn't replaced what we do, right? It's augmented the information we can provide to make sure the patient gets the best treatment possible.
Very good. And we read your lengthy and very well accomplished bio, Dr. Valdez. Something else that your board is certified in, and you said that this is a real focus for you, is dermatopathology. Talk a little bit about what that means.
So dermatopathology is studying the pathology of the skin, so skin lesions, right? So this is anything from a rash, trying to figure out why you have that rash, to melanoma. That's the worst diagnosis I have to make. And I do have to make that living in South Texas occasionally within my community. And it's just an extra area that I'm interested in. And again, living in South Texas, there's no shortage of skin biopsies for me to look at. There's lots of skin cancer running around. So I always say, to keep my community healthy, I see a lot of skin cancer. So I'm constantly telling my friends, family, anyone who will listen, to cover up and don't get too much sun exposure. And if you see something new, ask somebody about it. Don't be shy. Don't let it go. If there's something new on your skin, you can see it. Make sure you're getting someone to look at it.
Very interesting, and of course, very important. We always have these summer skin episodes, segments here at Dr. Radio. We are in the Northeast, but of course, we have to recognize that there are some parts of this country that are getting that direct sun all through the year, and it important. And tying that back to breast cancer screening. That is not something that is visible outside the skin. And as we mentioned at the top of this hour, we are in October, Breast Cancer Awareness Month. So this is so timely. Talk a little bit about screening recommendations and when people should be start going in for mammograms, what types of questions they should be asking, and what tips you have for those that have perhaps let a few years lag between screenings.
I'd be happy to. So, I love talking about my mom because she made it a routine for her to make her mammogram screening every year after 40 on her birthday. It's her little birthday present that
Oh
she
my
does for
goodness.
herself. And she sets it up every year. When it falls on a weekend, she has to work around it. But it's her routine. And I think routine is the most important when it comes to something that can be really helpful for your health, is getting it into some sort of routine. For me, it's October. October is when I get my screening mammogram because it is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And I've got everybody wearing pink. You can't see me, but I got pink glasses on. I love pink. And I want to sort of make sure that I am on it and I get it done every October. So routine is important. Women over 40 should be getting an annual screening mammogram. You should be making sure your family practice or your primary care doctor that's ordering that Screening test knows you have any family history. You have a family history, you may start those mammograms earlier. If you notice any changes, you're going to want to point those out to your physician and see if maybe you move earlier into the screening category for any reason. You're going to want to make sure it's part of your routine. And that's the most important thing you can do to make sure that we find these lesions early. And also know that if you get called back, it doesn't necessarily mean you have cancer. There is a process that happens after you get called back from your mammogram that you will go through. And I do get to call lesions benign. So when I see a biopsy, it's not automatically cancer. So, and I smile every time I can give a diagnosis of a benign, meaning non-cancerous breast biopsy. And it does happen. And I'm grateful for those opportunities.
Well, I think we have a call related to that. So let's go to that now. Chris in Pennsylvania. Good morning, Chris. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you for calling, or thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
So my daughter just had her first mammogram. She's 45 years old. She went in, had it done. They called her back, and they said it was benign. And I don't understand how they could say it was benign just by an ultrasound. I would have thought they would have done a needle biopsy.
That's a great question. And you're right to question that, right? After I just said that the pathologist is the one who can call it benign. With that screening mammogram that your daughter got, it's a screening test. So it's going to pick up all the little things that could possibly be harmful. When you go back for ultrasound or additional imaging, they can get a much better look. It's far more specific, that imaging, right? I have dense breast disease. I'll tell you myself, I get called back frequently. And most of the time, I don't get a biopsy. They look with the ultrasound and they can see that what they were concerned with on the mammogram is not concerning when you get a little closer look, a more detailed look under another method. So that's been my experience as well. If they are worried, once they have the more detailed imaging, they will perform a biopsy. So just know that she's getting perfectly appropriate care. No doubt she should follow up next year with a repeat, and they'll watch that same area and make sure that there's no new areas of concern.
Chris, thank you so much.
I haven't said anything to her yet because I didn't want to upset her, but I feel better now, and I'm not going to say a word to her just to make sure she goes back next year and gets it done again.
Wonderful.
Great advice. Good luck to you and good luck to your daughter, of course. Sounds like everything is where it should be. And I would love to thank you, Dr. Leilani Valdez, board certified pathologist. Thank you so much for joining us this segment. It was a pleasure. And yes, I can see your pink glasses in our Zoom squares, and they look fabulous. In honor of Breast Cancer Awareness Month, we are going to say goodbye. Thank you so much.